There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Well, hello and welcome to today's WCN TV program. It is Tuesday, September 24th, 2024, and we are live. Plenty to talk about in the news today. We have that we're really not going to get into deeply, but let's just go over a few of the headlines so we can mark this day in time. We have Hezbollah's exploding pagers, Israel launching a major attack on Lebanon, and war has escalated to new levels throughout the region. The U.S. is sending more military to support Israel, and this could quickly become a global war situation when Iran ramps things up further. World leaders are gathering at the U.N. headquarters in New York this week for the Summit of the Future, so member states can, quote, reaffirm their unwavering commitment to the UN, its charter, purposes, principles, and Agenda 2030. This is a giant step towards globalism, and the Pact for the Future that's planned to be signed by all world leaders this week includes a requirement that all member states embed UN agreements and resolutions into their own national laws. Ukraine's Zelensky will be there, and he also plans to meet this week with Biden, Harris, and Donald Trump. And, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu will also be there. Meanwhile, Japan has issued a dire warning about the COVID mRNA jabs that were declared safe and effective in 2020. According to Japanese scientists, these jabs are, quote, reducing the global population and effectively collapsing populations. The scientists, which are among the most respected in the world, also allege that international organizations such as the UN, along with multiple world governments, are involved in a massive cover-up to hide the full extent of this catastrophic loss of life. This is big, folks. I hate to say I told you so, but I did tell you so, like, kind of a million times. Meanwhile, the Florida Department of Health and the Surgeon General of Florida has just advised against any use of any mRNA COVID jabs going into the fall and winter months. They stated the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines present a risk of subclinical and clinical myocarditis and other cardiovascular conditions among otherwise healthy individuals. This is a whole other story in itself. You know, I looked this up online today, and nothing but one story after another debunking this and talking about how Florida is putting out misinformation and disinformation, but they don't seem to be attacking the scientists in Japan. I wonder why that is. Just asking. I've been researching the invasion of migrants into the U.S., and I did an article and radio broadcast on that today. And over the weekend, it was reported that there are now 5 known kill squads from around the world that are hunting Donald Trump. So isn't that nice? The news feeds are burning up here constantly, folks. They never stop. So there's a lot we could talk about today, but our guest today has done a deep investigation into the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. So that's going to be our focus on the program as we welcome Doug Hagman. Doug is a private investigator and host of the Hagman Report at HagmanPI.com, You all know him, so he really doesn't need a long introduction. Let's just say, Doug, thanks for being here and welcome to WCN TV.
Rob, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And wow. That's all I can say is wow. With the news headlines that you just referenced, there's like a decade's worth of news in a day.
It's like that every day. You know, it doesn't take much to come up with a few notes here of what's going on. I could have done a lot more, but I thought we would just mention a few things going on. This Japan situation is encouraging to me. At least somebody gets it.
Yeah, I totally agree. If you want me to start, I can just kind of just I'll start, and if anyone has any questions, that's here.
Let me just tell our audience, for our studio audience that's here, if you are watching on WCNTV.net, there you just click the button that says "Join the Studio Audience," and then you can be part of the program. Once you do that, there will be a little hand, a picture of a hand that you can push. Press that, and then I will know that you're interested in speaking, and you can ask questions, make comments, and things like that. If you're watching on Rumble, you can't do that, but if you go to WCNTV.net, you can do it. So just be aware of that. Or you can just watch. But we'd like you to participate. So this is where we meet every week. So, you know, kind of join in with us. Doug, tell us what's going on. Tell us.
Well,
you were hired to investigate the July assassination attempt in your state, correct?
Well, hired is probably an overstatement. I was asked if we would volunteer because of our proximity. I'm only 90 miles from where I sit to where this happened, 125 miles from, or 145 miles from Bethel Park, where the alleged assassin lives or lived. And, I'm very familiar with Pittsburgh, done a lot of cases there. So I was asked by a person if we would volunteer. So it wasn't, this is patriotism over profit. And I had to think about it for, I don't know, about 5 seconds. I said, sure, I'll volunteer. But the other part of it was I volunteered not just myself, but my team and the team of Shatter Ops and Save Them. And, you know, it was kind of funny because when I contacted them, I said, look, we've got a non-paying job and this is what it's about. It wasn't like, well, who's going to cover my expenses, our expenses, that is. It was, when do you want us there? And you know, they were here within, it was within a day, five different states, five different investigators. And from there, that was late July that we were asked to do this. And one of the questions I had was, well, okay, you know, why, if considering that President Trump has quite a few resources at his disposal, why us? And the answer I got was really twofold. One was the fact that we're well known in Western Pennsylvania. My agency is well known. I've worked with a lot of the DAs. Well, a lot of them are retired or have passed away, but a lot of the police, a lot of the DAs and such. And we also have inroads available to different departments. So that was one of the reasons. And the second reason is, and perhaps most important, conveyed to me was a lack of trust by individuals within the protection detail and the security aspect of things, which really surprised me, because why keep them on if there's a lack of trust? But beyond that, that was how I came into this, into the mix, and how I put together Eric Tech, myself, put together this team that they were here immediately. We did a just a briefing, if you will, a short briefing. And from there, we hit the road with various vehicles and one intent, and that is to see what we could find out from, or what we can find out about Thomas Matthew Crooks, what happened at the rally site on 13 July, and who was involved, and what's the bigger picture? Because we weren't getting anything, if you recall back then, really from the media or from the Department of Homeland Security or anybody. So we went into this, and little did we know this was going to be a lion's den. And I mean, it was not a typical investigation. 35 years of doing this, I don't think I've ever seen what I saw the last, I don't know how many days now, 50 days into this investigation. So far, this investigation, we've generated probably close to 400 and some odd pages. We've obtained witness statements. We've talked to witnesses. We've talked to people there. We've talked to police officers, one whistleblower who decided not to be a whistleblower anymore. But I'll give you the bottom line of our findings to date up front. And by the way, during the course of this, we had seen as well the attempted assassination of President Trump in Florida. And that was the 15th of September. And I'll say this, the Florida assassination and the Butler, the Florida assassination attempt, to be clear, and the attempt in Butler are indeed related. And they're related in a number of different ways. It's a higher level relationship than one would think. I'll give you the bottom line up front based on our findings to date, and then I'll drill down on a couple of things.
And folks, let me just say that Doug did share some of his notes with me, and this was an intense investigation that he did. This was not just a casual observer going in and making assumptions. This was a deep dive investigation.
Exactly. And one of the reasons I did that, just so people understand, so I didn't break any confidences, is as we were doing this investigation, we have been hassled, harassed by the feds, specifically the FBI, a little bit by the U.S. Secret Service Pittsburgh Field Office, the FBI Pittsburgh Field Office, one of the, the Butler County and the Bethel Park Police Departments. So we've been not welcomed in this investigation. And I've been in touch with the various task forces as well. And I've got my questions about those task forces, let me tell you, because what their focus is not, I mean, look, I'm not on the task force, and I don't share anything and will not share anything with the task force unless subpoenaed. But I will say I've got my concerns there because I don't know if they're going for the truth. But one thing, the reason I did share this is because during the course of this investigation, in addition to, of course, the harassment, I did just very quickly. And look, this could be nothing. It could be something. I don't know. I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a car guy. The vehicle that I use, the primary vehicle I use for this investigation, is a later model vehicle with all of these, everything's electronic, you know, no key, everything's all digitized or whatever. And it was 2 weeks ago when I entered my car, I got this splash screen on my dashboard saying, "Attempted theft detected." I've never seen that before. The car's 4 years old. I've never seen that before. Okay, so I took it to the garage, a friend of mine who has one of those computer things, hooked it in and said, "Oh, yeah, it looks like it wasn't." And by the way, this vehicle was used and then immediately garaged along with the security, had security around it. The man who looked at my vehicle said, "Oh, yeah," and then plugged it into the machine, whatever that does. Decodes the codes apparently, said it wasn't a physical theft. It was an attempted hack of the driver systems, including steering, acceleration, and braking. So I figured, okay, that's a problem. So what I did was to make sure that any information that we uncovered any information was given to a trustworthy source for later publication in the event that something was in there could have been responsible for that. And again, look, it could have been nothing. It could have been just a fluke. I don't know.
And since then, you've been driving your 1971 Pinto, correct?
Yeah. You know, I've been looking for that. I've been looking for the 71 Pinto. Right. Yes. So the bottom line up front is this. In the process of us looking at the Butler situation, which was the scope of our assignment, we identified some extremely troubling intersections between Thomas Matthew Crooks with individuals who we've identified as handlers or contacts or associates. And we connected those people to a Bethel Park business that appears to be a subcontractor for the U.S. Department of Defense. And when you think about this, and you think about, for example, the Kennedy assassination and his promise to withdraw, among other things, to withdraw advisors and troops from Southeast Asia at the time, there's some similarities here. Of course, that was one of many things. But now, to avoid potentially compromising what we're doing, we did not identify the business or the people, but we do have that information. And previous to that, we identified the intersectionality between Crooks and other locations beyond the date of the shooting, meaning that, well, I'll just come right out and say this, that we were using and we have been and continue to use methods much like the Heritage Foundation uses. And I'm referencing geofencing, geolocation type analysis. There's data out there that you can grab, you can buy, you can purchase, or if you know someone and they're sympathetic that you don't have the money to buy it, might slip it to you a little bit, you know? And it comes like, think of like, for every request for, oh, I don't know, devices that were in Crooks's house or devices that were in that shooting thing, club, you get the equivalent of like a Manhattan phone book. Now I'm dating myself there, but that's kind of like, okay, here's the data. And then from there, you have to spend the man hours to extrapolate the information from that data. But we are looking at not just Crooks being involved in Defense Department with Defense Department people and entities, but we're looking as well, and this is no secret, should be no secret, as the Florida attempted assassin, would-be assassin, the same defense contractors, the same military suppliers, and even the same DOD officials, and I use that word a little bit, the subcontractors would be a better term, overlap one another into this. Now, you're not going to hear this in the news. You're not going to hear this by any task force. I haven't heard it from a task force. And frankly,
one thing that I did hear in another report was that both attempted assassins had appeared in a BlackRock TV commercial.
Yes. Yeah. No doubt about it. Crooks, we verified that. We verified the authenticity of that commercial. And obviously, the Florida would-be assassin there was footage of him that was taken and used in a BlackRock commercial. So whereas Crooks appeared in one directly, the Florida shooter appeared in one because of the footage taken. And so there's a little bit of difference there.
It's really weird that a kid like this is having these connections.
Oh, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And you know, people look at him as like a nobody. I did send some images over to your producer, or the PDF over to your producer, if you want to. Nah, that's okay. Okay, yeah, perfect. The plots, plural now, to kill President Trump. And by the way, I will say this, they will continue. They will continue. The first image here is a picture that I was able to grab from my source. And frankly, I don't have time to look at social media right now much anymore. I don't know if this was ever made public. This was given to me from a whistleblower, from an unredacted after action report from Beaver County. This one image right here shows the locations of the Hercules counter sniper teams, as well as the various other elements within the area. And by the way, if you've ever been to this area, the first thought, and this was to the person with respect to the investigators, we all said it at different times, but we all said it, this feels a lot like Dealey Plaza. We've all been there to Dealey Plaza. We've all stood on the X in the grassy knoll. This was a kill box, and I have every reason to believe it was a kill box and used as such. Now, the question becomes, well, if it was a kill box, you would think that you'd send somebody better than a 20-year-old twerp to take out the President of the United States. I'm not so sure that was the intent of Crooks. I do believe, because this picture, although it doesn't necessarily indicate it, it gives you, and you can leave that on there just for a second because people can screen capture this. Again, this is unredacted. This was not shown to the public. I'll just kind of switch gears a little bit. At the top of that image is the suspect location, the sniper location by that red dot. Okay, right directly beyond that is that orange line. That is the chain link fence that goes across, separates the AGR property from the rest of the area. And then that right along that fence, between the building and the fence in that area, there were a lot of right where the suspect location placard is. There were probably 50 or 100 people that were gathered in that vicinity. Really, from the first tree line there that you see, all the way to the other end, and again, like 100 people gathered in that vicinity, and no one checked them out. They could have been walking there with bazookas, and there was no one paying attention to that, despite the fact that Butler, Beaver, well, I'll just say this: multiple law enforcement agents were situated inside that very building where the suspect was found. The temporary fence was erected. The stage, you can see it at the bottom of this blown up image, and you can see how close the sniper was to the stage. And one thing I'll note about this, because I know we're limited on time, is if you scroll back up a little bit or down, but it, yeah, okay, there you go. If you notice how this after action report, if you go a little bit higher, so you can see where that, there you go. Okay, if you look at this after action report, this was done as a CYA move, because I'll show you an image of that building where that triangular Beaver sniper line of sight arrow originates. Those windows all overlooked, or could have overlooked, the roof, the very roof where the suspect was on. Now, this picture here was, I believe that might have been taken from Josh Hawley. We didn't take this, but we were there. We have hundreds of pictures of every square inch of this place. If you look at between the tall building, this two-story building, and the one-story building, the one-story building is where the sniper was on, just to give you an idea of what was going on here. the windows are all the windows. That's one floor, and those rooms are. It's one big room, I should say. The two on the left, one big room. Two on the right, one big room. You could see right through.
So the building on the right is the one that Crux was on.
No, the building on the far right, the one-story building, is the building that Crooks was on.
That is a slightly sloped roof.
Oh, yeah, really. I mean, the slope, as Director Cheadle said, was just too much, right? No, not at all.
My goodness.
In fact, Eric, statute of limitation. I don't know. Eric the Tech was on that roof. It's okay to say that. But if you look between the second story and the first story building, you see a box there, down a little bit, right in the middle, right there in the center. You see you can't see where I'm pointing. Okay, yeah, that box right there. Okay, there is an air conditioner along with that box that's nearby. It is our belief that that's where Crooks actually climbed onto that roof of the building. Now, there are other possibilities as well, but based on witness testimony, the rifle was in a backpack. It was an AR platform rifle that did detach. It had a Magpul a collapsible stock on it. It had a red dot and was an an AR platform rifle. But he climbed onto the air conditioning unit. Again, this could be one of two locations. Witnesses, if their stories match 100%, I get nervous. If they don't match, we have to do more investigation. But this is where we believe he made his entry. He jumped onto that area right there. Now, the FBI, during one of the investigations, I had a podcaster go with him. Corey Mills and... Eli Crane had taken a podcaster, or a podcaster went with those two and a couple of their staffers, and surveyed this area. While they were surveying this area, the FBI would not let them in this particular area. They said, no, you can't go here. Now, I've been on guided tours before. I will not go on guided tours. If somebody says you can't go there, that's the first place I'm going to go. Nonetheless, they did what they did. But that gives you kind of an idea of the slope of the roof, the windows overlooking that building, and a possible point of entry. We do believe it was there, or perhaps a couple of buildings back has the same type of configuration where the rifle, the backpack was left. Now, the important part of this picture as well, if you see at the bottom, there's a concrete retaining wall, if you will. That wall is where that Crooks was first identified as a person of interest. He sat right on that wall right there, and he was using a cell phone, and he was using a rangefinder, and every one of the police officers, including the Secret Service, saw him do that and did not label him a threat. And there are three levels. There's, a person of interest, something else, and then a threat. The threat, of course, is the highest level, and that's when you act first and ask questions later.
So he's sitting there on the wall in full gear, and they didn't question that?
Never question him. And again, this is an area that was unprotected. Now, again, this is important. If you go back to the PowerPoint slide, I'll show you this. The slide number 4 gives you some information, and I don't know if anyone else has this information. If they do, my apologies to you folks for saying it's exclusive. The U.S. Secret Service, we were able to find out who was on duty that day with respect to Beaver County and the U.S. Secret Service. The Pittsburgh Field Office was in charge of this trip. The agent in charge was Timothy Burke. He's been placed on administrative duties. The lead advance agent, which is a real problem, and according to Josh Hawley, has failed all of her exams and tests and such to be an advance agent, failed them all. She was that lead advance agent. And that is the person who sets things up and approves things. She was the one to make the decision not to include the AGR buildings complex into the primary area of concern. That's a problem. And of course, you have the lead counter sniper, really doesn't play much of a part in this aspect. And it was one thing that is really concerning to me when people do something that they don't normally do or don't do something that they normally do, I have a problem with it. This was the first time the U.S. Secret Service counter snipers were deployed to support former president's detail. Never happened before. Never happened before. Why this time? I have to ask that question. And the two side
also, as I understand it, CNN never broadcast a Trump rally live before either.
And that's some of the anomalies we're going to get into just real briefly. And then, of course, the two site agents both lawyered up. And the second site, the second name there, Dana Dubray, had contracted with a very expensive lawyer, Mark Zaid. And Mark Zaid is known for representing every anti-Trump person on the planet. And I'm exaggerating, but he's big into representing anti-Trump people. Okay, now, the anomaly, we'll go right to the anomalies because this is critically important. Well, I'll tell you what, if we go to panel five next, that is Thomas Crooks. That's where he lived. And it's interesting because we have geolocation from that, geolocation reports from that address. And we also have, we conducted probably, I'm going to say 40 to 50 hours of surveillance post the shooting on that address. And the parents, there's, I'll just give you my gut instinct. There's something with the father that really doesn't sit well with me. That's my opinion. That's my reasoned opinion. The father had to know, I believe. This is my opinion now. Based on my investigative research, the father had to know that when he gave that rifle to his son at 1:30 p.m. on the day of the rally, and that something was not right. Because 25 minutes later, he went to a local gun store, purchased ammunition, and then traveled 53 miles from that location to Butler. And I've traveled that route many, many times. And I've got to say, it's not a fun ride. You don't go there by accident. And it's really, if you've ever driven in New York, Pittsburgh, Los Angeles, or San Francisco, Pittsburgh is like, it's like a roller coaster. Okay, the next slide is the, and I was very careful to avoid any offensive pictures. Investigators Luke and Landon went to the local library. This is what you're looking at here is a picture of his yearbook. And I think this was pointed out in the last issue of Wisconsin Christian News. And anyone watching this after this, if you're not a subscriber, please subscribe and please donate because this is the only way, in my view, this is the only way really that this information is going to come out. Between July 15th and August 15th is somebody had come into the library, cut two pictures out of the yearbook. He was in 1 year of four. His picture was only in one yearbook of 4 years, and his picture was cut out of that yearbook. That was his junior year, and a second picture was cut out. I'm not going to name the person who was cut out, but very interesting. In fact, I mentioned the wall. The next image is that very wall that you saw. This is from an unredacted Beaver County after action report. This picture was taken by a sniper of the of Thomas Matthew Crooks. Why wasn't this sent out immediately? Because he was a person of interest since he was first seen with the rangefinder. This is post rangefinder, and about almost 90 minutes before the shooting. There's a problem here, and it's not just communication silos. Okay, meaning communication wasn't the best. There's a problem here with law enforcement reaction times, in my view. If you go to the next slide, again, I try to make this as unoffensive as possible. I can show you pictures that'll just curl, it'll just make you. he was shot dead at that location where he lied, where he lays right there. And these, again, this was unredacted. This source is from the After Action Beaver County report. It's interesting because the Beaver County sniper and the medic who declared him dead are husband and wife. Is that something? I don't know. It's a little.
Say that again.
The sniper from Beaver County and the medic who declared him dead as he lied there are husband and wife. And the sniper is the husband of the medic was stationed in the building that overlooked that rooftop, but he wasn't there. He left. He left his post. There are plenty of reasons, excuses, that is, for him leaving his post, but none of them are good. If you go to the next slide, I'll show you a couple of other things here. These are the problems. Rob, you mentioned this. I've got some issues with what happened. And I wrote this. This was part of my official report to my client. Inexplicable actions exist and are woven within the timeline. When viewed in their totality, I'm going to tell you right now, they indicate both a foreknowledge of a potentially fatal event taking place, as well as a current and ongoing threat to President Trump. This is without question, and we saw that, of course, on September 15th, and we're going to see, I promise you, we're going to see this again. I'm going to be in Butler when he's down there on October 5th, I believe it is, along with my team, and we are going to be watching for some anomalous events. But criminals like to go back to the original crime scene. The crooks, let me see here. First, anomalies identified by investigators. Considered individually, again, their relevance, it could be just, you know, who knows. But when considered in total, they present a more disturbing aspect to anyone of any reasonable sensibilities. The next slide gives you the anomalies. Rob, you mentioned this. CNN broadcasts this really live on network television. They don't do that. What they do is they'll station somebody there, and then, of course, they'll have excerpts or cut-ins for the rally. They never, ever just continually broadcast this. They did on this day. Again, something that they don't normally do, they're doing now. Why? New York Times photographer was sent there and was filming in 1/8,000 frame per second rate. And that's all, usually, that's never done except in low-light combat conditions where bullets are flying and NASCAR. I can think of only two areas. The issue here is, if you capture the equivalent of a Zapruder film, a fatal event that could have taken place, that is worth a boatload of money, especially if it's in high def, as crazy and as sick as that sounds. My question is, why was this guy filming at such a high speed when it's not, when no one would normally do that? That's where that bullet trace came in. And that's why that bullet trace, it wasn't a bullet, it wasn't a fragment, it was a bullet trace, meaning disturbance in the atmosphere. But for me to explain it, I couldn't. I'm not a camera guy. And the I think I've got maybe one more on that. Let me see, maybe not. Oh, yeah, one more on that. Next slide, and then we can close that out. With Crooks, there were communication devices, just as with the Florida shooter. Except Crooks had the image on the top right is a garage door opener, universal garage door remote, or one that's kept on the wall of the garage. He had that in his backpack. That's a picture of it turned over as well to show the back. I failed to show you the explosives. The explosives were not crude. They were very advanced and would require military or bomb-making knowledge. This kid did not have that. There was only one reason. If a button was pressed, that those bombs did not go off. And that is because the receivers on those two bombs in his trunk were turned off. That's the only reason. So I just wanted to show you those. And I think the other two pictures, I don't think we really need those. But what we're really finding now is this connection. That's pretty much, which is good. This gives you pretty much, I think Josh Hawley released this. This shows you the location of the shooter's body, the Sniper Team North, Sniper Team South. Those are Hercules teams or Secret Service teams. Again, never before there. The bleachers, and then, of course, the stage. And Eric the Tech, not me, but Eric the Tech could stand where President, and did stand where President Trump stood, could take a flat rock and hit the AGR building without a problem. And that is a problem because the number of assets by the Secret Service, there were four assets there, as opposed to 12 at Joe Biden's event in Pittsburgh. And she's a much lower threat. So this is full of problems. But the bottom line up front is, on both attempts, we're seeing connections to military, paramilitary. We're seeing connections to Ukraine. And if President Trump is saying, look, I'm going to end this war, then everyone from the company that makes the screws that go into the bombs and trucks or whatever, to the tents, to the support materials, to the actual weapons makers, are going to lose a ton of money. And I do believe the motive can be found within that framework. And that's kind of gives you kind of an overview of where we're at right now.
Okay, let's bring in Ray and then let's see, Harry. Ray and then Harry.
All right, hey, Doug. Mike Adams, the health ranger.
Yeah.
He made a report about a second shooter. I want to find your opinion on that. And who was on that water tower? Was that a good guy, bad guy? Would that have been a second shooter?
Okay, I can guarantee you. In our professional opinion, investigative view, there was no one on the water tower. When the first inspection of the water tower, the ladder from the ground to the bottom of the ladder is about 24, 25 feet. There's a fence around that water tower. Admittedly, on the day of the rally, the lock and the chain was rusted. You could have certainly climbed over if you made an effort, but really, I don't believe anyone was on that water tower, good or bad. That's my view. In terms of a second shooter, if there was a second shooter there, and there certainly could have been, I don't believe he played any active role in what happened to President Trump. Although, we're still investigating the tree line, because we did see body cam footage of officers looking at an area of the tree line, which was deliberately trampled by the FBI in the days and the 72 hours after this event.
Okay. Harry?
You mentioned bombs. Were they set to go off with this remote? And, you know, I hadn't heard anything about bombs in the car.
Well, yes. There were two vehicles that had bombs. One was Crooks' vehicle, which was parked in the front of the AGR building near the road, actually on the other side of the road, in front of a greenhouse, which would have been potentially one way, which suggests, of course, detonating that bomb would have caused some issues, or the bomb, two bombs in the trunk. There was another vehicle, and that was a vehicle that was described as a light color. In fact, there's video of it, of a light colored conversion van being flatbedded from the street next to the Sheetz convenience store, which is located very close nearby. And that vehicle supposedly had bombs inside. However, we cannot connect with authority. We cannot connect that second vehicle to anything that happened over here. Although that sounds really weird, it's just the way it is. Until we can have definite 100% certainty, all we can say is allegedly there were bombs in this van, Why it was parked there, I don't have a clue. Who owns it, I don't have a clue. I know who's people say owned it. And the people who, the individual who allegedly owned that vehicle supposedly went missing, and supposedly you'll hear stories, well, that was the guy on the roof, not Crooks. That's not true, because I'll tell you how I know is because I looked at him square in the eyeballs about 3 weeks ago and verified that he's much alive. Now he doesn't have a van. His landlord said he had a van, a cargo van, not a conversion van, but he's very much alive. Hopefully that answers your question.
And Russ.
Yes, Doug, can you divulge who asked you to get involved in the investigation? Thank you.
No, I can't, because Pennsylvania state law, Commonwealth law, states that you cannot divulge the name of a client as a licensed, a credentialed investigator. I can't divulge that information without prior permission or without permission. And I don't have that.
Anyone else in our audience have any questions or comments right now? Now's your chance.
Fire away.
Well, let me just say that it's incomprehensible to me that anything like this could even take place. Back years ago, my wife and I were on stage with George W. Bush. He was literally 5 feet in front of us. Before he came on stage, you know, that we're sitting in the bleachers behind him. Before he came on stage, the Secret Service came out and told us what the rules were. Basically, you don't approach the president. You don't go to shake his hand. You wait for him to come to you. If you approach him, even to shake his hand, you see those guys up there, all around, and they did a 360. They will take you out. Even if you're just trying to shake his hand, you wait for him to come to you. So how this was allowed, it really appears to be deliberate and intentional. But years and years ago, I was at a Walter Mondale rally, of all things, believe it or not, I was there. And in, you know, for 2, 3, 4 miles around, there were nothing but snipers everywhere you looked. I didn't feel safe going to the thing, you know, and how they left this building that close, unprotected. Harry again. Come on in.
Harry's going to get me to
do Walter Mondale.
We live in Ronald Reagan's hometown. And years back, he came to town. Before he came to town, for about 3 to 4 weeks before that, the Secret Service is all over this town, sitting in the bars, listening to people, talking to people. They knew everything about everybody before he ever got here.
Yep. Okay. That's how they do it. That's how they do it.
And to your point, I'll say this. This is something I probably should have stated initially. Failure or failure to act or failure to deploy assets, we have traced back to Mayorkas, Cheadle, and even Acting Director Rowe. And in terms of investigation deficiencies, Christopher Ray and Assistant Director Abate all have, in my view, all have blood on their hands. And that's the blood of the injured and the dead gentleman from this event.
Doug, let me just ask you a question also. Is from your investigation, is there any evidence? We've heard rumors that Crooks was transgender. Is there any evidence that you've discovered on that?
Transgender? No. I don't have anything about that. Nothing about that.
Nothing with his associates?
No.
All right.
Now, I'll say this. The more secluded meetings that we're able to, and we were able to identify secluded meetings in Bethel Park in wooded areas through some electronic surveillance, if you will, the data. And that didn't make much sense. I went to every one of those locations. It just didn't make sense. So was there a sexual component to this? Look, I don't know. But I'll say they were just odd locations. Go ahead, sir.
JR has a question or comment.
Yeah, thank you. Doug, the two-story building next to where the shooter was?
Yes.
There's four windows up there. Was that being occupied by anybody?
It was supposed to be occupied by law enforcement snipers, as a matter of fact. There's different stories, but the snipers that were to be on the roof were moved because of the heat into that second floor building. The window that had the best vantage point of the building, the four snipers that were there inside that to overlook were called out. I think two had left early for prior engagements, and a second one or the third one left to supposedly to check on the activities of crooks, and reportedly was unable to get back in at the very moment, or like at 2 minutes or a minute before the shots began, and the remaining sniper walked down the stairs to open the door for him. The other excuse or the other supposed situation was they abandoned their post to look for Thomas Matthew Crooks, meaning the two remaining snipers, which really makes no sense because you had other assets on the ground that could have done that.
Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Let me just ask, Doug, can you say decisively that it was, from your investigation, that it was Crooks that fired the shots?
At this moment in time, I don't have any reason to believe that he did not fire at least three of the shots, those being the first three. That's my belief based on extensive investigation. Did he fire all eight? It's likely. Did he not fire at all? Frankly, at this point, it wouldn't surprise me. However, the acoustics do lend the explanation that the shots came within, I'm going to say, 20 yards from Crooks's position. So I'll say it's a pretty good.
And obviously, idea. You don't have access to any of the ballistic reports.
No right. One does, and that's a problem.
Right. Deanne and then Russ.
Hey, just to have great respect for you, Doug. A comment more than a question. We watched quite some time ago, I don't know, Rob, if you remember when Coach had on his show to watch from JFK to 9/11, it's a rich man's game. Boy, listening to you, Doug, describe all of this tonight sure brings me back to when we watched that video. It's almost like deja vu with the same kind of questions and setups and explosives, and it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Our government is corrupt, and ugh.
Yes, I would put the onus of this directly at the feet of Mayorkas, and I'm telling you, Mayorkas has. I'm looking very closely at Mayorkas, as well as all of the subcontractors, we'll say the military subcontractors on this, but JFK, it reminds me exactly that the template hasn't changed. Names have, but the template hasn't.
Okay, Russ, we're down to about 5 minutes here.
Okay, I just thought of I watched coverage on this where the gun that Crooks was supposed to have had was several feet away from his body. What did you look into that? Was that something to look into? Thank you.
Yes. And thanks for asking that question. You know, the only thing that we have are images, photographs taken from law enforcement when they got on top of the roof. The first thing the law enforcement's taught to do, sadly, is to throw the gun or throw the weapon away from the person that was using it. I don't know whether that happened, but when the first images I saw on the after action report puts the weapon in the well to the right of the subject that was left of the picture. That I found awful strange because it should be at or underneath his body. Now his body was turned over. I can show you these pictures, but you don't want to see them. His body was turned over at some point within 30 minutes of him passing away, of dying. And the blood analysis, the blood spatter analysis I did, is consistent with him lying in a prone position for about 30 minutes and being rolled over at that time. So if that's consistent, I don't know if the gun positioning is consistent or if, in fact, the gun was moved.
Okay. We're down to a little over 3 minutes. If you can talk a little bit about your thoughts on the golf club attack.
I'm sorry, in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry. It blows my mind when we were getting information about that. Okay, so you have a man who is a known threat. He's got a rap sheet longer than, 10 feet long rap sheet. He's known to everyone on the planet within the intelligence community, and he's able to gain access to the fence line at the very there's one location at that golf club that would offer the best possible vantage point to kill someone in that enclosed environment. And he was there for 12 hours undetected. And had it not been for a woman who got pictures of his plate, all but the last number, I'm sure he would have gotten away. The problem I have is the foreknowledge that it took. There's somebody within the circle of Donald Trump's presidential protective detail, or maybe even closer, that is giving information out, because that was an OTR or off the record event. Donald Trump did not make the decision to go to that golf club weeks in advance. It was not published. It was done relatively in a short period of time. As soon as that decision was made, within 45 to 60 minutes, the would-be assassin showed up at that very location and staked it out for 12 hours, knowing that he was going to be at that hole at that time. How did he know that? That had to come from the inside. And we think we have a suspicion that it came from one of the Secret Service agents who is involved with someone else in a romantic way. And we think that's perhaps one way it got out. But I'm telling you, it should have never happened. And I doubt the story about the barrel coming through the fence. That could very well be. But I think there was something else there with respect to the shooting and the attempted takedown of this man.
Yeah, that whole story was completely just nuts.
Right.
And talk about Mayorkas. Is guilty of more than so much. This is a guy also in charge of our border security, our homeland security.
Yes. You yes. I am very concerned about this. And in my view, he should face some inquiry, charges, trial, and disposition. I really want to thank everyone. I do hope, if you're watching this after the fact, please, folks, please support Wisconsin Christian News. We need them to carry on, and your support is necessary. Thank you for allowing me to say that. And Rob, thank you for inviting me. I hope I did okay.
You did great. You did. I just wish we had more time to get into more things here, but we are out of time. So,
well, I try to take the Like I said, almost 400 pages. I just try to take the high points.
All right. So it is HagmanPI.com. You can watch Doug's show Monday through Friday at HagmanPI.com or go to his Rumble page. Look him up there. Coming soon to WCN-TV, we have Shram Hadian, Pastor Butch Paw, John Guandolo, and Alex Newman in the coming weeks. So stay tuned and please share this program. Help get the information out there. Share it to your networks. Share it on your social media. And we will see you all next week. God bless.